The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And in this episode, we're talking about sound, which is good, because this podcast is sonic by its very nature.
That's right. It is a sound that is traveling into your ear holes, and hopefully it's pleasant. But we wanted to talk about sound more as an aspect of art and spirituality and even a soundscape that exists within nature and the ways in which humans have interacted with that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and a lot of it really just gets down to the heart of how do we interact with our world? What is our sense experience of the world, and what is our listening experience of the world? How do we take in the soundscape around us? How do we deal with artificial soundscapes? We live in a world of just overpowering access to soundscapes. You can go online and you can find just about anything in the natural or unnatural world to listen to, and you can stream it right into your head.
Well, and then there's just environmental sounds around us. And you had mentioned this earlier. We really take for granted the fact that we can manipulate sound around us so easily.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any given structure, any kind of artificial creation that we've made, or any manipulation of a natural environment, we're adjusting the way that we hear the world. You grow some hedges, great. You've just recreated the sonic experience of your environment. You build a house, same thing. You build a cathedral, same thing.
Yeah, these are more like analog examples of the sort of technology that we have at our disposal today.
Yeah.
But what if you were ancient man, ancient human back in the day, and you had only your surroundings to really play with sound, and you had some instruments, okay?
Yeah.
But you had your hands to clap with, and you had things to bounce that sound off of, and that's where something like caves become incredibly interesting.
Yes, yeah. I mean, especially in, we were just talking about how the environment outside of our office space is essentially an artificial canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an artificial river of roaring traffic and all of this, this stuff. And it's just easy to take all of it for granted and just to overlook the manipulation of sound that's going on. But yeah, but imagine yourself in a time where you have just this natural landscape and the soundscape that exists on top of it. And then you encounter this cave. What happens? when you encounter this cave, assuming nothing jumps out of it and eats you. I mean, just the sensory of experience of a cave is overwhelming. I mean, I feel like today we still realize that in terms of our sight, in terms of the tightness of the space. I mean, mm-hmm. it's still the stuff of horror movies.
The darkness.
But just think about it also from the point of view of sound.
Now, this is something that really arrested the imagination of Esther Engle Arkell writing for IO9. And she talks about the novel A Passage to India by E.M. Forster. Mm-hmm. And in this novel, there's something called the Malabar Caves. And she says they're deep and they're complicated. And any noise made inside of them, from the scrape of a match to the squeak of a boot heel, comes back as thunderous noise. The sound of the caves drive two British women temporarily mad. And this whole idea really captured her imagination. And so she says, to her internal disappointment, these caves, which are based on the Balabar Caves, do not have the power to drive people into altered states of mind with sound. But she says, hey, it does turn out that there are actually some caves around the world that do.
Oh, and before you think, oh, well, that's just some sort of crazy fictional creation, though. I mean, it did serve a literary point. She points this out in her article that it's really about the coming revolution in India, the mm-hmm. The gap between the understanding of the Indians and the British. So it works. It's not just E.M. Forster making stuff up and putting it in the book.
No, it's a nice narrative technique to talk about the unknown.
But then if you actually set out to find that cave, you would be somewhat disappointed.
You would be very disappointed. But if you are an archaeoacoustic researcher, you probably would know of several caves, but in order to get to those caves, we have to talk about what archaeoacoustics is in the first place.
Yes. On a very simple level, this is just the study of sound in an archaeological context. In as simple as, here's an archaeological site.
Mm-hmm.
We've put a lot of effort into what does it look like? What did it look like back in the day? Reconstructing it, reading any signs and symbols on it, and figuring out what things were meant to symbolize. But then when you get into archaeoacoustics, it's also, how did this place sound? What was the sound experience of this space? And when you start talking about the sound experience of a space, I realize that can sound a little bit new agey and hippy-dippy, and just try and eject that from your mind as much as possible. Because, again, just to bore it down, the sound experience of a space is vital. Sound is
sure.
an important sensory experience. And I think it's obvious that it would be, if not the primary driving factor in the creation of these ancient sites, it certainly is a factor in the experience of those sites.
Yeah, so it definitely is a relationship of the sensory world and the human and that monument or that natural area in which the person is sitting in, but they also measure the acoustic parameters of a place by the use of electronic instrumentation. So they are trying to figure out the physics of sound here and how it's playing out. Now, some would take issue with the field of archaeoacoustics.
Yeah, I mean, when you really get down to it, there's not a lot of science to back it up. A lot of this, not to say there have not been studies and there are not some fascinating findings, and we'll get into some of that. But at heart, a lot of it breaks down to us trying to put ourselves in the mindset and in the sense experience
mm-hmm.
of increasingly early humans. And when we're talking about the sounds that an environment makes, that an artificial environment makes, or even an augmented one, such as a decorated cave, we're talking about percussion, we're talking mm-hmm. about the ringing of rocks, we're talking about echoes, and we're even talking about wind, water, and heat expansion sounds. Any kind of sounds that are a part of that environment. But yeah, as I believe U.S. Researcher Stephen Waller points out, and he's one of the primary researchers we're going to talk about here, a lot of this is about considering the physiological and mental effects of sound and how we use and have used and continue to use ritual to generate altered mind states and aid visuary experience. And again, today we have access to all of these soundscapes, artificial and natural. We have all, you know, you can put in any kind of ambient or high energy album to augment your headspace. But in earlier times, that wasn't an option.
Yeah, and I think the main issue with archaeoacoustics is, again, The interpretation. Yeah. So, yeah, you can hear various soundscapes in nature, in a cave, for instance. And there may be some symbolism to accompany it. But I think that the thing that's being levied against archaeoacoustics is that we are pattern recognition machines. Mm-hmm. So just because we see a correlation here doesn't necessarily mean that there is a causation. In other words, that people were manipulating sound intentionally in these spaces for ceremonial purposes, for instance. Now, Esther Engel Arcus writes, although the idea is not proved or even provable, I do like it. It indicates there is a gulf between two mindsets, not separated by geographical distance, but by time. Two people standing in the same spot and experiencing the same phenomenon will perceive them completely differently. For one person, the experience is a hallucinatory moment, bringing together sound, vision, and religion, while the other will just see some pictures without taking note of anything else.
Yeah, that's well put. And it reminds me of Jerusalem syndrome a bit, which we've discussed mm-hmm. In our Stendhal syndrome episode about the impact of art and also historical sites on the person. And so much of it is subjective, what information you're bringing into it with mm-hmm. it, your own personal history, your mythological or religious interpretation of the world. And certainly a lot of that is at play here.
Yeah. And so it kind of boils down to this. In archaeoacoustics, mm-hmm. it could very well be that there just happened to be a soundscape that worked really well with symbolism and ceremony. Or it could be that the culture at that time really was trying to manipulate those areas and have it work with their mindsets of how the world worked. So we're never going to get to a definitive answer here. It definitely is the chicken or the egg argument.
Yeah, and I can see where it's a hard sell for someone to at least interpret some of this this effort as, oh, well, they're saying that Stonehenge or this cave or that cave exists primarily as an historic site because it changed the way people heard sounds. I can see where that would be difficult. That would be like saying, well, Stonehenge exists because people like the way it tasted. You know, we have such a visual mindset anyway. But when you create ultimately a sacred site, mm-hmm. I feel like any way that site augments your sensory experience would be important to the people who made it.
And important to study as well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, artificial buildings, artificial constructions, they change the environment. They change the micro environment, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, but also just in terms of sound. You walk into a cathedral, you walk into a Greek amphitheater, the sound changes. Your sound experience of this space is different than it would be at an unaugmented portion of the earth.
Well, and one thing, too, that I didn't mention is that one of the criticisms levied against archaeoacoustics is this bias that early humans were not sophisticated enough to really understand that sound could be manipulated. Hmm. So you could say, oh, yes, in a Greek amphitheater, that's totally intentional, right?
Yeah.
But someone might take issue with it in a cave.
Yeah.
So that's something to consider.
Yeah, but then it also kind of comes down to someone saying, well, early man couldn't possibly appreciate the fact that the cave is changing the way sounds come out. Like, that's ludicrous. So I feel like there are two sides to it.
Indeed. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about whispering galleries.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back, and we're headed to Chichen Itza.
Yes, an ancient Mayan site with a ball court, which sounds really sporty of them, right?
Yeah, you sound like you're showing real estate right now.
I know, and I feel like it's a 1920s property, too. And look, this is a ball court where they would wear their white outfits and play tennis. But in fact, that is not at all what this ball court was about.
No, this whole site, 1,000 years old, and you have, a core to this is you have the pyramid, the kind of ziggurat-ish Mayan pyramid that I'll try to include a picture of this with the landing page for this episode, because you really have to look at it to get into everything that we're talking about here. But you have this pyramid, you have this ball court, and indeed they are not playing basketball here. This is a life and death game. That is occurring.
Yeah, just let's foreground this in the fact that the Mayans were really big on sacrifice. And we think of sacrifice as this terrible cultural thing. But if you happen to live during that time in the Mayan culture, then it would be, you would have very high stature if you were someone who was going to be sacrificed. Your family would be held in high esteem. So the culture was revolved around this idea. And so you have a ball court, which sounds like a sporty, fun thing, but in fact, it's this field where the drama of life is being played out. And it was first excavated in 1920 by archaeologist Sylvanus Morley. It's 541 feet long and 240 feet wide, and it is the largest in Mesoamerica, with walls on two sides and small temples at either end.
And I also just want to throw in that if anyone's looking at this, you know, brutal sport, it's, I mean, ultimately all sports are just mock wars anyway, and maybe this is just a little more honest sport.
Yeah, the idea behind this that I've seen is that, again, it was a life and death game that was played, and the person who won actually offered his head to be executed. Again, this is because in this mindset, you know, it would be a great honor to sacrifice yourself. So keep that in mind, because I want to go back to the structure of this. The temples actually formed a whispering gallery, the amplified sounds spoken within them. And you can stand in this temple or by the temple side. Again, you've got two walls on either side and then temples on either side. And you can speak in a low voice and you can be heard distinctly at the end of the court, 500 feet away. And the idea, at least according to David Loveman, who's one of the researchers probing the acoustic properties of ancient sites, is that the Mayans could create other sounds, not just whispering. They could do a whooping bird flying from right to left. Mm-hmm. And he said that the priests could also make sounds that sounded like fierce animals, like rattlesnakes and jaguars. Again, this is spectacle. This is life and death. And it would make sense that these whispering galleries would help to sort of ratchet up the suspense.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting here, just to really get down to what the Mayans were doing with their buildings and how they were manipulating perception. The pyramid temple, with its again with its step-like sides.
Mm-hmm.
If you're viewing this, and you're viewing it in the starting in the spring equinox, time when the day and night are at equal lengths, you can see a shadow glide down the temple steps and over several days transform into different shapes as it moves across the courtyard. And most scholars believe that this shadow represents the feathered Mayan god Kukulkan. So if they're manipulating shadow and light,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's any great stretch to imagine them manipulating sound as well.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, too, is that this is all sort of one big ceremonial, celestial marker wrapped up in one, as you say, with sound, with light. And it would make sense that this is probably one of the most important areas in which life is playing out in Mayan culture.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, this is the center of their universe, you know, mm-hmm. this is the center of their culture. And they have all of their mythology wrapped up in it and around it. So, yeah.
Now, you can find whispering galleries throughout the world. Grand Central Station in New York is one, an unintentional one, I believe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the arches help to create this sonic illusion. You can whisper in one area and be heard in another. Let me see. St. Paul's Cathedral in London,
mm-hmm.
and the Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol Building. And apparently, when I was doing this research, this is a sort of a unique way for someone to propose marriage.
Huh.
Yeah.
There you go, using the sacred aspects of the site, however unintentional, to take part in a sacred ritual.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, a romantic notion to know that your ask for marriage, I suppose, is traveling along in this very intimate way.
Yeah,
across space and time to your beloved's ear.
All right, now we're going to travel to a far different structure, in fact, a natural structure, and that's the Lascaux Caves. And these are, of course, located in France. You'll recognize the pictures, ancient illustrations of animals on the wall, you know, very stereotypical cave paintings.
Mm-hmm.
So really a jaunt back in time, far beyond the mere, you know, 1,000 years ago of the Mayan example we were discussing.
Yeah, Werner Herzog actually documented them in his film Cave of Forgotten Dreams. And in it, you see herds of aurochs, bulls, and horses depicted running along the walls. There's mm-hmm. a sense of motion. And that is important in terms of archaeoacoustics. Stephen Waller of the research lab Rock Art Acoustics believes that the echoes of ritual clapping outside the cave would have sounded like hundreds of hooves drumming on the ground. There you go.
Yeah, he said that he also points out that many different ancient cultures attributed thunder in the sky to hoofed thunder gods. So in that sense, it makes perfect sense that reverberation within the caves would be interpreted as thunder and inspired paintings of those same different hoofed entities right there on the cave wall.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this is that it enhances the experience. Now you're painting with sounds, right? You're not just depicting life, you're using the acoustics to really ramp up the experience. And especially if you're looking at it in a ceremonial sense. And we've talked about how the rhythmic clapping is really important in cultures. First of all, it's something that that will coordinate the synapses for everybody, right? So
yeah,
it's sort of this group inclusion thing to clap. But second of all, it's something that is intrinsic to ceremonies. So if you're trying to get everybody together and dance and song and to tell stories, then clapping is really important.
Yeah, everyone's looping up, synapses firing at the same time, getting in the same head zone. You know, in this, I can't help but be reminded of contemporary artist Anish Kapoor,
mm-hmm.
who does all these, you know, wonderful, often large-scale sculptures. But there's a mirror piece, a concave mirror, at the High Museum here in Atlanta. And you stand before it, and you move around in front of it. And, of course, the mirrors alter how you appear and those around you appear, but it also plays with sound. And you can have one person stand a little closer and a little person stand a little further back from it. And it alters the way you hear each other. So the idea of creating art and sound, visual art and sonic art all wrapped up into one, has been with us for a long time, it would seem.
Yeah, especially if you consider symbolic thought. And this was actually brought to light pretty recently, that Homo sapiens are not the only ones who are capable of symbolic thought. And researchers this year discovered a shell engraved with a geometric pattern at H. erectus site known as Trinil on the Indonesian island of Java. And that dates to between 540,000 and 430,000 years ago. I bring this up because it becomes an important aspect of how we order the world. Okay, we need symbols. Symbols are the basis of language.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have cave art, if you have sound acoustics interplaying with that, then you also have this ability to kind of take hold of abstract thought
mm-hmm.
and actually change behavior based on symbolism. And some would even argue that symbolic thought has ushered in morality or codes of living. So that's why I think it's so important for all this stuff to be considered as being wrapped up as sort of one thing and not necessarily teased out as its own.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing ancient aliens about this idea. I mean, it gets right down to the heart of what humans are and what has allowed humans and conceivably could have allowed Neanderthal or Homo erectus to ascend to the heights that they have.
Indeed.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Which would bring us to Stonehenge, because there couldn't be, you know, anything more enigmatic wrapped up in a mystery and then pierced with a tiny plastic sword of confusion.
Than Stonehenge. Is that what we did in our two episodes? Did we pierce it with the tiny sword of confusion?
So many swords of confusion.
Yeah.
But I think that speaks to how complex it is.
I mean, Stonehenge really resonates with everyone because it is this amazing site that clearly has a lot of thought involved in it, a lot of mental construction and symbolism, and we are often at pains to really understand what it meant from a modern perspective. A lot of great work has gone into it, and we have a lot of great great answers now to what went into it at different phases. And some of the ideas out there do evolve around the way Stonehenge sounded as well as looked.
Yeah, and as we had discussed before, this Stonehenge is something that has been in the works for hundreds and hundreds of years. So think about all those people, all those generations adding to it, adding symbolic layers to it as well. And you get to the soundscape of it, and that becomes a very interesting aspect of it as well. Waller, in the October 2012 edition of Journal of the Acoustical Society of America, and Waller at the time was acting as an independent scholar, he details how the shape of Stonehenge mimics the patterns of positive and negative interference produced by two sources of sound, an auditory illusion that may have been imbued with something that sounded like otherworldly significance by a culture that didn't necessarily understand the physics of the phenomenon, but sort of understood that there was something happening.
Yeah, he says that Stonehenge might have worked as kind of a giant sound wave interference filter, and the interference here occurs when you have two instruments that would play at the same time, at the same note. Each creates sound waves that have alternating high and low pressure segments. So when the high and low pressure segments collide, they cancel each other out.
Now, Waller asked blindfolded participants to do this, to basically move around in a circle with two pipers playing notes in a field.
I wonder if this was expressed on the call out for study participants. Hey, we were doing a scientific study. We need you to walk around blindfolded in Stonehenge while people play pipes.
I know. It sounds like the plot for, like, This Is Spinal Tap Part 2, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking, that or The Wicker Man or something. It doesn't sound like it's going to end well.
No, it doesn't. But they were asked to do this, and the listeners were taken through spaces where the sound is amplified and spaces where the sound waves collide out of phase and are muted. So loud, quiet, and so on and so on. So they did this, and he reported that the same sort of auditory effect was happening here when he compared it to Stonehenge and the Piper Stones. Mm-hmm. And also what would have been in place. Because remember, Stonehenge right now is not complete. It's just sort of a shell of itself.
Indeed, Stonehenge as it stands today is incomplete. So if you're going to study the acoustics of Stonehenge, sometimes you have to actually work with fake Stonehenges as well. As we'll see in the study of Dr. Bruno Fassenda of the University of Salford in the UK. this guy, like Waller, studying the acoustics of Stonehenge. But since the original Stonehenge is incomplete, some of the stones are toppled, and also didn't have access to electric generators that would be needed to run the equipment, they turned to the World War One memorial of Stonehenge replica in Maryhill Museum in Washington State here in the United States. Which is interesting to think of studying this ancient location by using this as well as a World War One memorial. I'm glad they didn't use Carhenge or any of the other iterations that we've
Carhenge.
Seen.
Carhenge, yeah. And didn't they pop balloons, I believe?
I believe so, yeah.
And the reason is because they couldn't bring in electricity, so they're trying to just do some auditory noises that they could then determine the decay rate of energy and figure out the energy time curves at measured positions. Now, the study's conclusion is that Stonehenge was a reflective environment in which any sound is made to reverberate due to the flat, hard surfaces. So we're talking about a 1 second reverberation time.
Yeah, and that would certainly be enough to be noticeable by anybody that's entering into the circle. And it's also an optimal reverberation time for large lecture halls, ensuring that a good speech is interpreted intelligibly by those in the vicinity.
Right. So, you know, again, we are not exactly certain how it was used, mm-hmm. why it was used, but it's very obvious that there was that time lapse in sound and that the person entering that space might have experienced whatever it was, ceremonial or otherwise, at an elevated level, an altered state, given all the other data and stimuli and meaning surrounding it.
Indeed. Now, you pointed out the flat, hard surfaces, and this takes me back. I believe it was Waller who pointed out that at times they could actually find art in caves by clapping and hearing where the reverberation was coming
from. That's right.
Right,
yeah.
And so you end up getting into that sort of chicken and egg, right? Did they paint this horned beast on this hard, flat surface because it's easier to paint things on a hard, flat surface, and
yeah.
It's kind of the standard. Or was it because of the reverberation, the sonic resonance of that particular spot?
It's hard to say. Kurt Hopkins, writing for Ars Technica, says scientists, whether acoustic scientists or archaeologists, are for good reason reticent to draw conclusions that are not based on provable, duplicable facts. But at least we can do this. Picture what such a structure with such an acoustical profile would have meant experientially to visitors. The human imagination values form. The circular form of Stonehenge and the relationship of points therein must have been lent an otherworldly dynamic by the special character of its sound.
Indeed. And again, I think so much of that is so easy to overlook in our modern environment, where we're just surrounded by environments that are artificial and create ultimately artificial sound experiences. And then, you know, every album or SoundCloud file that we've ever pumped into our head mm-hmm. to augment our experience of reality, or even to augment our experience of another artificial reality. I mean, that's how crazy our modern experience is. We're listening to artificial soundscapes while we plug our head into a book or playing a video game, or maybe we're watching a separate film. All of this is going on. It's easy to lose track of what artificial sound and artificial stimuli would have meant to early people.
Well, and I was even thinking about what it means to us now and how important it is. And we plumbed this a little bit in our episode on time and perception and music mm-hmm. and how we can so easily alter it. And we try to do that. We try to alter our day-to-day experience and find some meaning in it through art, through music. So it would make sense that if you were devoid of the music that we know today, that this would become exponentially important in your world.
Indeed.
as an early human.
Indeed. Now, in closing, we want to lead out here with a great example of almost modern archaeoacoustics, if that makes sense. Kind of a modern take on some of these presumed ancient practices of utilizing the natural acoustic properties of caves. I'm talking about the Great Stalactite Organ. And you'll find this in Lari Caverns of Virginia. This what we're talking about here is arguably the largest musical instrument in the world
mm-hmm.
because instead of using pipes, this organ is wired to little soft rubber mallets that gently strike stalactites of varying length and thickness. So it looks like, when you look up a picture of this, it looks like something that the Phantom of the Opera or, you know, Vincent Price as Dr. Fibes would play, because it's in a cave and here's this sort of old time, like, you know, 1950s organ. You play the keys, little mallet strike the stalactites, but to achieve the kind of precise musical scale you need to actually play the organ, the chosen stalactites cover a range of over 3.5 acres. But since you're in this enclosed cave environment, you can hear the music throughout.
Yeah, this organ was invented and built in 1954 by Leland Sprinkle, a mathematician and electronic scientist, and it took him over 3 years to complete it. We're talking about looking at each of those stalactites and trying to figure out their thickness and how much they're going to conduct sound, and then wiring up over 5 miles of these chosen stalactites to create this network for the organ.
It's crazy. I mean, in recent years I've gotten big on the idea that, you know, cave environments are special and we shouldn't mess with them too much. But if you're going to mess with the cave environment, I guess turn it into an amazing pipe organ. Sprinkle, this was interesting too. I was reading this, of all places on, DJ Food's blog. He has a fabulous blog about music and comics and pop culture stuff. But, he mentioned, Sprinkle got the idea for this after his son banged his head on a stalactite and it rung with a quote, pleasant sound.
I love it. Yeah. I love people like Leland Sprinkle, who's like, and now I can create the world's largest instrument underground.
Yeah.
Using stalactites.
Yeah, and it's, apparently they used to, you could buy vinyl records of music, that was produced using this pipe organ. And in 2011, the Finnish-Swedish music collective, Pepe Deluxe, actually became the first artist to write and record an original composition on the great stalactite organ. And you can find that out. The name of the album is Queen of the Wave. And also you can just look up DJ Food's post about it. I believe he has an embedded SoundCloud. I'll be sure to link to that as well as to some other of the interesting articles we've discussed here in the landing page for this podcast episode.
All right. What do you guys think? When it comes to archaeoacoustics, is this just the old pattern recognition of the mind?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this intentional ritualized landscapes?
Yeah, or is it somewhere in between? We'd love to hear from everybody. It's certainly an issue that people seem to have strong opinions about. Where are you going to find us? Well, you're going to find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's our website. That's our mother page. That's where you'll find all of our podcast episodes, our blog posts, our videos, links out to our various social media accounts.
And if you would like to send us a missive, please do. We like to hear from you guys a lot. You can send us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.